Philippians chapter 1, beginning with verse 21, Paul tells us a little bit about life. He says, "For me to live is Christ, and to die is gain. But if I will live on in the flesh, this will mean fruit for my labor. Yet what I shall choose I cannot tell. For I am hard pressed between the two, having a desire to depart and be with Christ, which is far better." You know, we live our lives every day for different reasons. Every one of us in this room has something that they live for. And what I mean by that is there is something that is unique about each one of us that we're passionate about. Something that we really enjoy in life. And we all have different things that we enjoy in life. Perhaps it's a hobby. Perhaps it's a craft. Perhaps it's being a part of a club or a civic organization. Perhaps it's family members, especially grandchildren. Perhaps it is something that we feel our life would be incomplete without, having the very best that life has to offer us. And when you think about these things and these that you have a passion for, things that you enjoy in life, that you people you want to be around, things that you want to do, have you ever stopped to ask yourself the question, what is the end result of all of this? What is the end result of these thoughts? In other words, what do you hope to accomplish with all of this? And what do you live for in your life? Paul said, "For me to live is Christ." He even went as far as to say that everything else is rubbish. It is things that he is going to put away in life that he no longer has a need for, because now he lives for Christ. He had such a passion for Christ that he was even ready to die so that he could go and be with Christ, which was indeed his greatest desire. So this morning, for the next few minutes, I would like for us to consider some things to see if we agree with the Apostle Paul. For me to live is Christ. For me to die is gain. You know, in all of my years of church service, I have only heard on one occasion from a prayer in the public assembly where the prayer was made for the Lord to come quickly. Lord, come now. Lord, take me out of this mess. Lord, give me that which is better, that which is great. I've only heard it one time in 35 years of church service. And I heard it here. And the man that said it is sitting here today, Brother Jim Prevatt. Lord, come quickly. Let me go be with you. Let me enjoy the fruits of being a child of God. Sometimes I think we need to pray that prayer, because what is waiting on us is so far greater than what we have here in this life. But I think we also need to develop the attitude of the Apostle Paul that as long as I'm here, as long as I am on this side of eternity, let me do whatever I can. Let me live for Christ. Let me work for Him. Let me strive to do His will. And let me share Christ with other people. That should be our prayer as well. So this morning, let's complete this statement. For me to live is, and you fill in the blank. You know, a lot of people in this life live for pleasure. For me to live is pleasure. And we'll say that. We may not say it with our lips, but we also often say it with our actions. You know, pleasure was a god to the prodigal son. We all know the story of the prodigal son. And when we think about the story of this young man, it becomes evident that he had reached a point in his life where he had become dissatisfied with the way his life was. Obviously, he lived with his father and brother and what other members of the family that were there, and obviously they worked either farm life or shepherd life or whatever. And this was something to him that he did no longer want to be a part of. He wanted something that was better. He wanted more. He wanted something different. And so he went into the far country. And when he got into the far country, it became evident that he was living for nothing else but pleasure. The things that life could give him to help him enjoy life. Now, you know, we all want to enjoy life, don't we? Sure we do. But that was his purpose. And it wasn't the fact that he wanted to live in pleasure. It's obvious that he wanted to live in sinful pleasure. Now, I want you to know that there is a definite difference in pleasure and sinful pleasure. For you know, when God created this world, He created this world to be a pleasurable place. He built this world in such a way that you and I can enjoy living here on earth. At least that was the plan. He gave us the natural beauty. He gave us the warmth of the earth, the excitement of the things in this world that we could enjoy as we live from day to day. But then here comes Satan. And he literally took and made a shambles of God's pleasurable creation. You see, Satan is going to come along and he is going to help you see the sinful things of this world. He is going to make you forget the godliness that God has asked of you and the godliness that God expects of you. So we need to be sure we understand the difference in pleasure and godly pleasure. There is also something else that we need to understand, is that worldly pleasure, wholesome or sinful, for that matter, is only temporary. Solomon taught this in Ecclesiastes chapter 11 and verse 9. He said, "Rejoice, O young man, in your youth, and let your heart cheer you in the days of your youth. Walk in the ways of your heart and in the sight of your eyes." In other words, what Solomon is saying, enjoy life. Enjoy the things you see. Enjoy the things you do. Enjoy where you are. Enjoy life. But understand, it's temporary. And we know that because of the way that Solomon finished this verse. Listen to the latter part of this verse. "But know that for all these, God will bring you into judgment." Now, this verse is taking on a completely different meaning. Yes, I want you to enjoy life. I want you to enjoy the things of life, but you need to understand they don't last. They are temporary. And sooner or later, regardless of what you do in this life, you will stand before God and He is going to bring you into judgment on how you have dealt with the pleasures of this life. You know, the Hebrew writer tells us that in Hebrews 11, verse 24 and 25, talks about Moses. Moses, when he became of age, he refused to be called the son of Pharaoh's daughter. Choosing, now get this, now why would anybody do this? Choosing rather to suffer affliction with the people of God rather than to enjoy the passing pleasures of sin. What is this telling us? Moses knew what Pharaoh offered and what Egypt offered in life is not going to last. He knew there was something out there that is far better, and these things came from God. Now, this isn't to say that we're not to have a pleasurable life. Don't go home and tell your friends and neighbors if Aaron said that we can't enjoy life. I'm not saying that at all. Yes, because God made life for us to enjoy. But what I am saying is that if we say, "For me to live is pleasure," if every waking minute is to get what the sinful world has for us? Yes. Now we've crossed that line. But some people live for pleasure. Some people live for popularity. For me to live is popularity. You know, the desire of popularity will cause people to make wrong choices in life. We worry too much about what the person sitting next to us thinks about what we say and about what we do. And we can even make wrong choices that will not only damage ourselves, but we can make wrong choices that will damage other people as well. For example, Pilate. Think about this character for a minute. Pilate had a God that was popularity. He worried about what people thought about him. He wanted to do the things that made the people happy. And we have proof of that because of the trial of Jesus. When Jesus stood before him on the night of his trial, he knew that Jesus had done nothing wrong. He knew that Jesus had committed no crime, no crime that was worthy of death. But then there were the people. And the people demanded that Jesus be put to death. And now he has a choice to make. He can do the right thing, or he can do the popular thing. And even in Mark 15, verses 14 and 15, we read, Pilate said to them, "Why? What evil has he done?" But they cried out all the more, "Crucify him." So Pilate, wanting to gratify the crowd, released Barabbas to them, and he delivered Jesus after he had scourged him to be crucified. He wanted to remain popular with the crowd. You know, again, we all want to be popular. We all want people to look at us and say, "Oh, isn't he a nice guy? He does all the fun things in life. We need to be more like him." We all want that. You know, popularity has caused great stress among our young people because they want to be a part of the crowd. But remember, popularity is offered by the world, and it is a temporary thing. Remember the words of John in 1 John chapter 2, verse 17, "And all the world is passing away with its desires, but whoever does the will of God abides forever." In other words, it's not going to last. And most of us, we can think back to our high school days particularly. That's where it's the worst, in high school. And we think about walking through the doors of the school and everybody runs up to you and, "Hi, how you doing?" And then before the end of the day, the tables have completely turned and they wouldn't give you a thought. That's how it was at my school. And we go home and we're thinking, "Oh, I'm not popular anymore." And so we do something. We try to do something to make ourselves popular so that they will be waiting on us when we get to the front door tomorrow. And it has caused many young people to go astray. And you know the saddest thing about that? It doesn't end when we turn 21. We still want to be popular, don't we? We want to be the one people look to. We want to be the one people call on. We want to be the important one in people's lives. And it doesn't end when we leave those teenage years. But like I say, unfortunately, it can damage us. And it can damage those around us. And it doesn't last. And again, I'm not saying that there's something wrong with being popular. Our Lord, even though the Jews hated him, was tremendously popular with the crowds. Crowds followed him everywhere. He even had to get away from them because they followed him everywhere he went. And he needed some alone time. He was very popular. But we don't need to assume that we live for popularity. Then we have people who live for possessions. Can this be said of you? For me to live are things
I live for things. Now again, let's go back to what I said at the beginning, that we all have a passion for things. I have a passion for things. Most of you know what that thing is, don't you? Y'all know I love music. Philip and I are building my 7th guitar. I love it. Can't wait. I've already picked number 8 out. I love this. That is my passion. I enjoy it. But I don't live for these things. A lot of folks now, this time of the year, we're in the middle of August and September's coming up. But guess what starts in September? College football. People live for college football. They are obsessed and absorbed with it. You know the truth about it? If college football fell off the earth tomorrow, this world wouldn't be a worse place. Because it just simply don't matter. But we love it. We enjoy it. And I'll be sitting in front of my TV like the rest of you, screaming and yelling. But we don't live for it. That doesn't drive us. Oh, it may drive some folks, but it shouldn't. There are so many things that we can live for instead of living for God. Let me give you some example for possessions. We have biblical examples. Achan, for example. Achan loved things. He was like a lot of us. We enjoy our things. He enjoyed things so much that he went against the law of God, and he stole or he took the spoils from the raid of Jericho and hid them under his tent. After he was told, along with the rest of the Israelites, don't do this. But yet he did. We have the biblical example of the rich young ruler who comes to Jesus. Lord, what can I do to have eternal life? What can I do to be right? What can I do to be a follower of you? So Jesus told him, keep the commandments. Well, I've done that. Well, there's something else. Give your riches to the poor and come follow me. Wait a minute, Lord. Now you're getting into my pocketbook. I can't give away what I love. And this story ended because he went away sorrowful because he had a lot. Another example is the rich farmer. The rich farmer patted himself on the back and said, look what I've done. I have nowhere to put my goods. I will tear down my barns. I will build greater barns. And I will pat myself on the back and I will say, eat, drink, and be merry, for you have goods laid up for many years. And that's where he put his trust, in his things. God took his life that night. And he didn't have those things anymore. He lived for his things. We have the rich man in Lazarus. He was so consumed with what he had that he wouldn't even feed the man that was at his gate starving to death. We have the Apostle Paul's example of Demas. Demas has left me, he said. Why? He loved the present world. It all comes back to things. It all comes back to the sinful world, the things that we want in life that have nothing to do with God. That's what we're after. That's what so many people are after today. But you know, these possessions was the reason these people lived. But remember, as with the other things we've talked about, they're temporary. Listen to what Jesus said in Luke chapter 12 and verse 15. Take heed and beware of covetousness. For one's life does not consist of the abundance of the things he possesses. This is not what life is all about. This is what Jesus is saying here. Life is not about what you have in your garage, or the garage itself for that matter. Life is not about what you have in the bank or the land that you have on the other side of town. Life has to deal with godliness because all these other things can be yours if you'll put God first. Matthew 6:33. So we never need to allow ourselves to be consumed with things.
And then finally, some people live for power. The first man of power that was mentioned in the Bible, his name was Nimrod. Nimrod was the great-grandson of Noah. He was the grandson of Ham, son of Cush. It is said that he was a mighty hunter before the Lord. It is said that he established Babel, where the tower was built. He went on to establish the cities in the land of Shinar, or in Babylonia, and all along the course of the Tigris River, and in Assyria, towns such as Nineveh and Calah, very large metropolitan areas, powerful cities, and he established them all. The Bible doesn't tell us how Nimrod dealt with this power, only that he had great power. Now, you think about for just a minute what power can do for you, or maybe yet do to you. Remember the Apostle John? He dealt with a man named Diotrephes. Diotrephes was one who loved to have preeminence. Now, you look that up in the dictionary, and the word will be defined superiority, supremacy, greatness, power. This was important to Diotrephes. And wherever he went, he wanted people to look at him like this. He was what I refer to as a better than thou. You know people like that? Sure we do. We want that aura about us that people think we're something special. That pedestal was made for us to climb upon and to be on top. And we were made so that other people would look up to us and look to us for the finer things in life. A lot of people like that. It's power. It's position. And yes, it is a worldly thing. Power is something that have started many battles. It has started many wars. Now again, it doesn't necessarily have to be wrong to be powerful. We've had some powerful people in life that turned out to be very fine people. But the fact is, it can be wrong. One good example of this is King Nebuchadnezzar. In Daniel chapter 4, Daniel is interpreting a dream for Nebuchadnezzar. And he is indicating that God is displeased with him. And that God will remove him from power. And if you look at verse 30 of Daniel chapter 4, Nebuchadnezzar is going to remind Daniel of his great power and the greatness of Babylon, which is where he rules. He says, "Is this not great Babylon that I have built for a dwelling, for a royal dwelling, by my mighty power, and for the house of honor of my majesty? What do you mean telling me I'm going to lose all this? I built this. It's mine. I rule over this, and you're going to take it away from me?" In his own mind, he had great power. But listen to the next verse beginning. "While the word was still in the king's mouth, a voice fell from heaven, 'King Nebuchadnezzar, to you it is spoken, the kingdom has departed from you. And they shall drive you from men, and your dwelling shall be with the beasts of the field, and they shall make you eat grass like oxen, and the seven times shall pass over you until you know that the Most High rules in the kingdom of men and gives it to whomever he chooses. And that and very hour the word was fulfilled concerning Nebuchadnezzar." Oh, what great power he had. What a great kingdom he had. And just like that, it's gone. Power is only temporary. To live for power is the wrong thing. You know, there are so many things that we could bring out, but I think this proves what I'm trying to say. As children of God, we don't live for pleasure. We don't live for popularity. We don't live for possessions. We don't live for power. Friend, you and I today, we are to live for God. I hope that each one of us can truthfully say, for me to live is Christ. And if you're living for anything else, or if you're living for anyone else, then my friend, you're not living. At least spiritually, you're not living. Today, if anything stands between you and your ability to say, for me to live is Christ, get rid of it. Put it out of your life and put God back where it needs to be. My friends, if you are not a Christian, don't let sin continue to rule your life. Get away from it. Say no to it and give your life to the Lord. Through obedience to the gospel of Christ, my friends, you can have the greatest ruler, the greatest leader, the greatest father that you could possibly have. And if you are a Christian and you have allowed the world to take your life back over, we want to give you an opportunity to make a change. Put these worldly thoughts aside, these things that are consumed you, things that you live for that is different than our Lord, and put God back into your life. What do you live for? For me to live is? Answer that question. If you need to respond to the invitation, please come while we stand and sing.